when you've got the best, you like to show the best off, and we do have the best when we have Tom Joyner, one of the great, great talk show hosts in America. And Tom Joyner, I know you've recently had some back problems. I trust you're getting better. But we're mighty proud to present you to the nation as one of the, well, not, well, maybe the very best talk show host, one of the top anyway. So come on in, tell us what you're going to tell us about today.
I'll do it, Carl. And you're right. I've had lower back pain for 45 years. It got worse, and I had it had a stimulator put into my back. Tomorrow morning, I'll go back to my doctor, and he'll tell me if there's no infection and that the wires that go down to stimulate the spine are still in place. And if so, then I'm a happy camper. Sure feels better. You were mentioning, and I'll get to my commentary in a moment, you were mentioning Jimmy Rogers. My first broadcasting job as a general manager was in a place called Kerrville, Texas. It's in the hill country. And Jimmy Rogers, the house that I was living in, Jimmy Rogers' last home was right across the street. Now, obviously, he'd been dead for a long time, but it's kind of interesting when I hear you talking about Jimmy Rogers. I want you to consider today what the Liberal Democratic Party, the biased mainstream media, and socialists like George Soros are doing to our country. More on Soros in just a moment. But suffice to say that he is the guiding hand and the financier of the continuing protests in America. These protests are not genuine. They are contrived to undermine the Trump presidency. Liberals don't hate Donald Trump as much as they hate his stated agenda. They can't do much about his agenda, so they attack Trump personally. What's happening now is unprecedented in American history. We must remember, liberal Democrats were smug and arrogant when they thought that there was no way for Hillary Clinton to lose to Donald Trump. The media did its part by citing polls that show Trump had no chance of winning. All was happy in fantasy land of liberalism. But the American people had tired of the same old politics from Washington, D.C. What Donald Trump was promising to do was exactly what the American people knew had to be done to break the cycle of politics as usual. Liberals were stunned when the results of the election became apparent. The same people who had been admonishing Trump to agree to a peaceful transfer of government power when Hillary won, suddenly became angry, hate-filled, and united in their determination to not allow a peaceful transfer of power. Even before Trump took office, liberal Democrats attacked him personally. Suddenly, they decided that the election was not about the Electoral College, but about the popular vote. It is true that Hillary won the popular vote, but that is not how we elect presidents. Liberals don't want to talk about the fact that their liberal friends in California provided the Hillary excess of popular votes. Trump began fulfilling the promises that he had made to the American people, and liberal anger intensified. Outrageous statements and claims have followed. No rational person believes, for instance, that Obamacare will not destroy itself in 2017. The figures simply don't add up. Democrats have known that for at least 7 years, and yet they failed to come up with a plan to cure the ills of Obamacare. These same Democrats demand that Trump produce a plan of health care in his first month in office. All of this malarkey about people being left uninsured should Obamacare be replaced is just that, malarkey. Trump has not talked about replacing Obamacare before he has the right answer to replace it, and that takes a little time. Let me repeat, Obamacare will die under its own weight this year if nothing is done. Democrats know that as well as Republicans. Trump's cabinet nominees have been stalled by fanatical Democrats in Congress. They want to decide who Trump can have on his team. They know they can't stop these nominees, but they're willing to harm the country in order to strike at Trump. The personal, vitriolic attacks on Trump's nominees have been the harshest in history. Attacking a man or woman for having been successful in life and becoming wealthy is spiteful, especially when the Democrat on the attack is a multi-millionaire themselves. There is so much to be done to reverse the damage that Barack Obama and liberal Democrats have exacted upon our country. Instead of giving President Trump time to carry out the agenda that the voters gave him the power to do, Democrats want to play politics at our expense. What Trump proposes will, in time, prove itself to be good for the country or not. How can any president, Democrat or Republican, deal with the issues confronting us if the other party keeps throwing obstacles in the way simply to undermine their efforts? It is petty, it is mean-spirited, and it is anti-American. You cannot destroy Donald Trump without harming the country. Today, approximately 8 weeks into Donald Trump's presidency, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here because it's not quite that long. Liberal Democratic politicians continue to ignore the needs of our country to pursue their hate-filled agenda against this president. The liberal mainstream media has become a dishonest arm of the Democrat Party. Paid protesters tie up airport traffic, block roads, set fires, and practice violence upon those who hold views different from their own. Now, is all of that a coincidence? Does anybody believe that? Not by a long shot. It is coordinated mayhem designed to undermine the Trump presidency and destabilize our country to the extent that Congress can get nothing done. Near maniacal people like Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Elizabeth Warren, and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi command headlines with their bitter rhetoric. In the case of Maxine Waters, a far-left activist from California, her stated rhetoric against President Trump is intensely delusional. This woman shows ignorance by calling for Sharia law in the United States, even though under Sharia law, she becomes a second-class citizen with no rights. On February 7th, Waters railed against Trump's attempts to find common ground with Vladimir Putin. In doing so, this mentally challenged woman said that Russia was invading Korea. She can't help being extremely unattractive, but she could help free herself from the remotely incoherent words that she uses if she would put aside her hate. Waters has said that she will not meet with President Trump and will oppose his every move, even before she knows what those moves might be. In the case of Nancy Pelosi, she recently said on national television that so far she has not seen anything that she can support from President Bush. You heard me right. This woman can't even keep track of who the president is. This is the same Pelosi who said that politicians had to vote for the Obamacare bill in order to find out what was in it. Elizabeth Warren was barred from speaking about Jeff Sessions again on the Senate floor because she repeatedly violated Senate rules. This woman is a vicious, hate-filled leftist to whom nothing is off limits. She's called Pocahontas for a reason. She pretended to have Cherokee blood in her to gain a high-paying but minimal work job at Harvard. Warren is everything that Democrats should avoid. Make no mistake, the turmoil you see happening all around us since the Democrats lost the presidential election is carefully orchestrated, most of it, as I said, financed by George Soros, a man who has said that the main obstacle to a stable and just world order is the United States of America. Who is this man? Georgi Schwartz, better known now to the world as George Soros, was born on August 12, 1930, in Hungary. Soros' father, Tivadar, was a fervent practitioner of the Epirota language, invented in 1887 and designed to be the first global language, free of any national identity. The Schwartzes, who were non-practicing Jews, changed the family name to Soros in order to more easily assimilate into the Gentile population. As the Nazis spread into Hungary during the 1930s, that's what they did. They changed their name. In other words, the Soros family hid their Jewish heritage from the Nazis. When Hitler's henchman, Adolf Eichmann, arrived in Hungary to oversee the murder of that country's Jews, George Soros ended up working for a man whose job was aiding in that effort and confiscating property from the Jewish population. Soros went with this man in his work on his rounds, taking the property and reporting on other Jews to ingratiate himself to the Nazis. Soros has said they were the happiest days of his life. George Soros has been actively working to destroy America from the inside for decades now. People have been warning us. 2 years ago, news sources reported that, quote, Soros is an extremist who wants open borders, a one-world foreign policy, legalized drugs, and euthanasia, unquote. In 1997, Rachel Ehrenfeld wrote, quote, Soros uses his philanthropy to change all that we know, or more accurately, deconstruct the moral values and attitudes of the Western world, particularly of the American people. His open society is not about freedom. It is about license. His vision rejects the notion of ordered liberty in order of a progressive ideology of rights and entitlements, end quote. The most important whistleblowers on Soros are David Horowitz and Richard Poe. Their book, The Shadow Party, outlines in detail how Soros hijacked the Democratic Party and now owns it, lock, stock, and barrel. The book again, The Shadow Party. Try it. It will curl your hair. Soros has been packing the Democratic Party with radicals, ousting moderate Democrats for years. The shadow party became the shadow government, which then became the Obama administration. By Soros' own admission, he helped engineer the overthrow of governments in Slovakia, Croatia, Georgia, and Yugoslavia. When Soros targets a country for regime change, he begins by creating a shadow government, a fully formed government in exile, ready to assume power when the opportunity arises. The shadow party that Soros has built in America resembles those he has created in other countries prior to instigating a coup. In November of 2008, Soros appeared in an article in the German magazine Der Spiegel to give his opinion on what the next president, Barack Obama, should do after taking office. Here's what Soros said. I think we need a large stimulus package. Soros thought that around $600 billion would be about right. He also said that he thought that Obama presents us a great opportunity to finally deal with global warming and energy dependence. Obama quickly did institute the large stimulus package and set about to micromanage energy and concerns about global warming upon taking office. Although Soros does not yet control the Republican Party like he does the Democrats, his influence is spread throughout the Republican Party as well. Money talks in Washington, and Soros has lots of money. In 2008, Soros donated $5 billion, that's with a B, $5 billion to the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, to ensure Obama's win and wins for other Saul Alinsky-trained radicals. This anti-American socialist has been contributing $1 billion plus to the DNC since Clinton came on the scene. Hillary Clinton's email trail exposed that when she was confronted with the need for an appointee at the State Department, George Soros sent her an email giving her three names to choose from. Predictably, Clinton chose one from the Soros list. When Chelsea Clinton married with funds from the Clinton Foundation, the Soros family had a large hand in that wedding. Soros is buying up media properties. He's been doing it for years in order to drive home his message to the American public that they are too materialistic, too wasteful, too selfish, and too stupid to decide for themselves how to run their own country. Soros' private philanthropy, totaling nearly $5 billion, continues undermining America's traditional values. His money has provided the funding for abortion rights, for atheism, for drug legalization, sex education in schools, euthanasia, feminism, gun control, globalization, mass immigration, gay marriage, and other radical experiments in social engineering. If it breaks down American society, it is something that George Soros wants to fund. When you see ads, listen for who sponsored them. Some of the non-governmental organizations that Soros funds with his billions are MoveOn.org, the Apollo Alliance, Media Matters, the Tides Foundation, the ACLU, Acorn, La Raza, and many more. All are far, far left. Without Soros' money, would the communist Saul Alinsky's Chicago machine still be rolling? Would SEIU, Acorn, and La Raza still be pursuing their anti-American activities? Would big money lobbyists still be corrupting our government? Would our college campuses still be retirement homes for 1960s radicals whose aim in life is to indoctrinate our children rather than educate them? America stands today at an abyss, and that fact is directly attributable to George Soros. He has vigorously, cleverly, and insidiously planned the ruination of America, and his puppet, Barack Obama, led the way. Fortunately, the American people prevented the next Soros puppet, Hillary Clinton, from carrying on with his anti-American agenda. On January 18 of 2016, we learned that Soros was purchasing the two largest coal mines in the country for pennies on the dollar. The mines were declaring bankruptcy, which Obama and Clinton said they were going to cause, just because Obama's first term in office began, and when Hillary Clinton was running to succeed Obama, they undermined the coal industry. And who profited? George Soros. That kind of underhanding deals is how George Soros accumulated his vast fortune that he now uses to destroy our country. Don't you wonder how all of these so-called protesters get by without working? Soros-backed MoveOn.org has been consistently organizing and calling for protests. While all of the protesters are not paid, a great many are, and the Soros organizations provide them with legal aid, with housing, with food, and other comforts to encourage protests and other damaging things. Now, they would have to work if they didn't take all of those freebies from Soros. They're not going to do that. The billionaire Soros have been deeply involved in revolutions and political uprisings across the globe, including the Arab Spring. This point has led many to question what his end goal is for the United States, where heavily funded protests are still raging on over a fair and free election. The answer is that George Soros and the politicians on his payroll will stop nothing short of destroying America as we know it. Matthew Continetti wrote that Democrats have been in power so long they've forgotten how to oppose. Their party has been on a roll since 2005 when the botched Social Security reform, the slow bleed of the Iraqi war, and Hurricane Katrina sent the Bush administration into a tailspin. The Democrats won the Congress in the following year and the White House 2 years later, and while they lost the House in 2010 and the Senate in 2014, Democrats still had the advantage of retaining the White House, a president seemingly immune from criticism, the courts, the bureaucracy, and most of the media. The correlation of forces in Washington has weighed heavily in favor of Democrats for a decade, but no longer. The Democrats seem not to understand how to deal with Trump and the massive change he brings to the nation's capital. During the general election, they fell for the idea that Trump could be defeated by conventional means, spending hundreds of millions of dollars in negative TV advertisements, Still, they lost that election. Republicans control the House now, the Senate, 34 governor's mansions, and 4,100 seats in state legislatures. Vice President Joe Biden in 1962 put forth a rule that stipulated no Supreme Court replacements during the last year of a presidency. Chuck Schumer himself, in a 2007 speech, expanded that waiting term to the final 18 months of a president's term. Think clearly about that hypocrisy. They set it up that way so that during the last year, and then through Schumer, the last 18 months of a president's term, no Supreme Court nominee should be affirmed. Compare that with what they are saying today. Now, I hope you'll listen carefully to the following. A few years ago, at an immigration overpopulation conference in Washington, the former governor of Colorado, Dick Lamb, explained how to destroy America. And he said this. First, to destroy America, turn America into a bilingual or multilingual and bicultural country. History shows that no nation can survive the tension, the conflict, and antagonism of two or more competing languages and cultures. It is a blessing for an individual to be bilingual. However, it is a curse for a society to be bilingual. Pardon me. The historical scholar Seymour Lipset put it this way. The histories of bilingual and bicultural societies that do not assimilate are histories of turmoil, tension, and tragedy. Canada, Belgium, Malaysia, and Lebanon all face crises of national existence in which minorities press for autonomy, if not independence. Pakistan and Cyprus have divided. Nigeria suppressed an ethnic rebellion. France faces difficulties with the Basques, the Bretons, the Corsicans, and the Muslims. Second, Lamb said, to destroy America, invent multiculturalism and encourage immigrants to maintain their culture. Make it an article of belief that all cultures are equal, that there are no cultural differences. Make it an article of faith that black and Hispanic dropout rates are due solely to prejudice and discrimination by the majority. Every other explanation is out of bounds. Third, we would make the United States a Hispanic Quebec without much effort. The key is to celebrate diversity rather than unity. As Benjamin Schwartz said in the Atlantic Monthly, the apparent success of our own multi-ethnic and multicultural experience might have been achieved not by tolerance, but by hegemony. Without the dominance that once dictated and what it was meant to be an American, we are left with only tolerance and pluralism to hold us together. I would encourage all immigrants, Lamb said, to keep their own language and culture. I would replace the melting pot metaphor with the salad bowl metaphor. It's important to ensure that we have various cultural subgroups living in America and forcing their differences rather than, as Americans, emphasizing their similarities. Fourth, I would make our fastest-growing demographic group the least educated. I would add a second underclass, an unassimilated, uneducated, an antagonistic population that is against what we stand for. I would have this second underclass have a 50% dropout rate from high school. Lamb said, my fifth point for destroying America would be to get big foundations and businesses to give these efforts lots of money. I would invest in ethnic identity, and I would establish the cult of victimology. I would get all minorities to think that their lack of success was the fault of the majority, and I would start a grievance industry, blaming all minority failure on the majority. The sixth plan for America's downfall would include dual citizenship and promote divided loyalties. I would celebrate diversity over unity. I would stress differences rather than similarities. Diverse people worldwide are mostly engaged in hating one another. That is, when they're not killing one another. A diverse, peaceful, or stable society is against most historical precepts. People undervalue unity, but that's what it takes to keep a nation together. Next to last, I would place all subjects off limits. Make it taboo to talk about anything against the cult of diversity. I would find a word similar to heretic in the 16th century that stopped discussion and paralyzed thinking. Words like racist or xenophobe halt discussion and debate. Having made America a bilingual, bicultural country, having established multiculturalism, having the large foundations fund the doctrine of victimology, I would next make it impossible to enforce our immigration laws. I would develop a mantra that because immigration has been good for America, it must always be good. I would make every individual immigrant ignore the cumulative impact of the millions of them. When Lamb said that, a chilling fear quietly rose above the ominous cloud that every attendee at the conference knew was true. Every American in that room knew that Lamb was enumerating what was happening to our country. That has been several years ago. Discussion is being suppressed. Over 100 languages are ripping the foundation of our educational system and national cohesiveness. Even barbaric cultures that practice female genital mutilation are growing as we celebrate their diversity. American jobs are vanishing into the third world as corporations create a third world in America. Take note of California and other states. To date, tens of millions of illegal aliens and growing fast in those states. It is reminiscent of George Orwell's book, 1984. In that story, three slogans are engraved in the Ministry of Truth Building. War is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. Something as obvious and as simple as President Trump's decision to temporarily halt immigration from seven Middle Eastern countries that were identified by the Obama administration as troubling areas of terrorism for a period of 90 days, while a better system of vetting these immigrants can be instituted to protect the American homeland. With that, we see liberal Democrats and the mainstream media oppose it. That is extremely dangerous, but totally in keeping with the Democratic Party's aim to undermine the President of the United States. Someone asked, what would Jesus think about President Trump's efforts to extremely vet immigrants? To that, I call your attention to the extreme vetting all of us will face before being admitted into heaven. Carl?
Such a great commentary. All I can say, it was great. And thank you for that commentary. And more of the same coming from my friend Tom Jonah. He's a great treasure to WTSB. We're mighty proud to present him and listen to his truth.
Carl, always a pleasure to speak to the people of the WTSB audience and worldwide on the Internet. I'm looking forward to next Monday when I've got a very powerful commentary. I hope that everybody does realize, for those maybe who haven't tuned in before, that I do a lot of research on what I say. I check it left, right, and every other way. And if I make a mistake, I have said and I repeat, I will immediately correct it, unlike what we get from our mainstream media these days. And so I thank everybody who tunes in. I appreciate all of those who send me well wishes and good comments, even those who send bad comments. But you know, Carl, in all of these years that I've been doing this with you, I have received, I think, one negative comment.
Well, everybody's got the right to be wrong one time.
Exactly. But it's a real pleasure to be with you, and it's always great, by the way, Carl. I know I think you'll be 90 this month, is it?
That's right, the 28th.
Yeah, 28. It's always great to be able to tune in and hear somebody who's been here for 68 years. I remember what you said earlier today. 68 years in that community, giving service through this radio station and through your career. It's always a pleasure for me to be with you, and God bless America.